You're listening to episode 6 of When Someone Great Is Gone. If you haven't listened to the episodes before this, we recommend going back to listen from the start. Today's episode contains themes of grief and death, so it may not be suitable for all listeners. Sunday, the 26th of July, 2020. I have to say, if you told me this time last year that I'd be back in my family home in Stroud, living with an Australian boyfriend and making a podcast on grief and the loss of my mum, I would have been pretty shocked. And I still kind of feel a little bit in disbelief as to what's been happening recently. There is definitely something of a meta-narrative in being this creative about making a podcast on grief and creativity. And the irony of that is definitely not unnoticed. For me, the act of recording and using audio to remember emotions and look back on emotional times is my way of creating a memory for myself. Memory is such a weird concept. It's this idea that we process a piece of information to reflect upon it. This idea that we can think back to a particular feeling or a certain point in time. I think creativity is actually relying on memory in a lot of different ways. Everyone's story, situation, loss, and form of creativity is different. And this process has been so special to me because not only has it been my way of creatively expressing my grief, but it's been a way of connecting with so many other people who have grieved as well. For some reason, I'm recording the final episode of this series on the 26th of July, on a Sunday, which is the exact date and day of the week that my mum Kate passed away on. And there's something quite ironic about that, in a beautiful, memorable and creative way. For this final episode in series 1 of When Someone Great Is Gone, I was interviewed by Bridie, my co-producer. It was my turn to try to define what creativity is and what it's got to do with grief and memory and how we often remember someone through being creative and why creativity is so important to our emotional healing. It's really weird being interviewed.
The tables have turned.
Yeah, I'm chatting shit. I need to calm down a bit.
At its core, what do you think creativity is?
I think creativity is, at the heart of it, some sort of existential expression. Like, I just think it's a way of dealing with the fact that you can also create something. We're not like some deity as people, we're just people. However, if you can manifest something and create something, you're effectively toying with this idea of being a creator, right? It is that idea of creativity being something new and an expression of yourself.
For me, it's what you said there about it being kind of an existential act. To me, there's something inexpressible about the fact that we're alive.
Yeah.
Creativity to me means to put your imagination out in the world.
Just having dance as another way of like communicating things.
It frees people because you're just letting your mind be seen.
If I'm happy, like all you want to do naturally as a person is dance.
It's a process that doesn't need to be perfect. It's inherently imperfect. You know, every piece of music, every piece of art is flawed. And embracing creativity is embracing those flaws.
I think it's such an inherent part of every single one of us. You see it so much in children. And I think sometimes as we grow older, it's something that we feel that we have to access through certain things rather than it just being a part of who we are.
The act of Frankensteining the breadth of your experience.
Where your brain subconsciously seems to draw lines between the dots of prior experience.
An idea expressed in any form.
Could be making a podcast, or it could be, you know, singing a little ditty for your mates. Ditty. Who says that? That's a creative word.
When I'm alone and in my work, I just feel like that is the truest form of myself that I know.
For me, creativity is about how you live your life and not just about a succinct area of the creative arts.
I think if you've ever considered yourself as a creative person, then the chances are that you probably are.
There is something completely incomprehensible and vast and dizzying about being alive and being sentient, and to create, or an act of creativity, is to try and make sense of that moment just in this kind of like howl into the abyss. Let's just chat a little bit about when you started writing music and that process for you in terms of your grief.
So I think the first band I was ever in was when I was in year 7, and it was with my best friend Will and another girl called Jenna, and we used to do gigs in my garden, and we actually came up with a song called I'm Not an Emo, I'm Just Depressed, which when I look back on it, I'm like, wow. And no, it's an absolute banger. I still remember it so well. And we,
oh my God.
I'm not going to sing it right now, but I'll try and find. No, it's like, I'm not an emo, I'm just depressed. I'm not an emo, but black is best. I'm not an emo, I'm just scared of the sun. No, I'm not an emo.
Oh, this is the kind of stuff I would have been listening to when I was 14. Like,
literally,
emo subculture in Leeds was a strong fingerless gloves game.
So it was like the whole MySpace emo phase. Like, everyone loved it. We were Grebos, not emos, apparently. I played cello for years, and I sung in choirs and in like a gospel choir as well, and was in orchestra all through school. And then when I went to university, I was in another band, and now I'm in another band. And it's never been a pursuit of a career for me. I've never once been like, oh, I've got to make it as a musician. It's actually been that sanctuary for me and that place of creative self-expression, which I think is such a lovely relationship to have with creativity. Because as we've touched upon before, the commodification of creativity is sometimes quite a horrible and difficult idea to deal with, because at what point does your creative expression turn from a way of expressing yourself and a form of therapy into something that is commodified and is used for money making, basically? And I think I've come from this place where I've never wanted to explicitly be a musician, but I've always wanted to play music because it makes me feel better about myself.
I am interested in listening to Nadia talk in episode 1 about how she was writing and she was using her grief to write music, and then she was kind of going into the major label route, and all of a sudden there are all these people saying,
write this song, write about it. Why don't you write about that fact that you lost your dad at 10, or make a big hit, because everyone's wanting, you know, that
it's
capitalism.
Like commercializing.
That's right, yeah.
And literally making a profit from your emotions.
Of course. And wow. I lost it. That actually made me, it's weird, it almost stopped me writing. I actually hated music for a year, and I didn't listen to music.
God, that's really interesting that it sparked that in you.
Yes, it did. Wow. And actually, till this day, I have to tread carefully not to let myself get into that space.
We live in this society where we're encouraged to think of productivity, not creativity, or we're encouraged to think that creativity is productivity. And you know, you see it a lot. It's like, oh, I've done this, I've done that, and that makes me a good person, and that makes me a valuable member of society. And I wish that we could be in a place where we would, I don't know, it's hard, like, but creativity in and of itself is inherently valuable.
Yeah, and it's that classic thing that's like, if you didn't post it on Instagram, did it really happen? And I feel like I absolutely hate that. We can bleep that out.
actually, people always say, where did you go? And I was like, I went off social media. So I didn't listen to music, didn't write music. And I was just depressed. And then all those feelings that I was feeling about grief and things that were going on in my life, they started to come flooding back.
I can validate my pain myself. My family validates our pain collectively. But in the public sphere, my pain is only validated through what they see on social media and through what they see in the world. And that is a horrible thing to grasp, like, as a creative, right? Because, you know, I'm not the world's number one creative, let's be honest. But a lot of great artists and musicians and writers have spoken from a place of pain, and that's how they've been successful, because it's an amazing way for the general public to empathize with their situation and to normalize discussions of pain. But also there is that element of commodification. It's just always going to be this weird catch-22.
How do we reconcile that belief that I think we both share about not wanting to sensationalize pain, about not wanting to romanticize pain, about creativity being inherently valuable, with the fact that you also want to exist in a capitalist society, you also want to be paid for your work? You know, we have an Instagram account for this podcast that you do because I'm rubbish at that. And like, there's just this constant tension, I think. Like, if you're a person who creates in this world, and particularly if you're a person who creates in this world from pain as a way to cope with it, then how do you not get basically run over by capitalism? So what I'm saying is, viva la revolution.
The thing about grief is that, as we said before, it's so subjective. People express it in so many different ways. But it's also an umbrella term for a series of emotions that you feel from a loss. So for a record label or for an institution to try and commodify upon that emotion is really, really tough. And from my perspective, it's horrific to hear that. The problem is it that we don't understand grief as a society because maybe we don't talk about it enough? Or is it that grief is so hard to define unless you've lived it yourself or lived through it yourself, that people don't understand what it feels like to monopolize upon those emotions? Throughout this series, I've spoken to so many people about their definitions of grief, and the only real definition is that it completely varies from person to person.
What is grief? An absolute shit show, that's what it is.
How would you both define grief? Like, what's your definition of grief? It's a sort of
something really hard for me to put a specific definition on.
I wish I'd taken the first question now.
A friend once said to me when my father died that grief is just the other side of love.
She described grief as being like a fingerprint because it's unique to everybody.
For me, grief is stillness.
If you have the capacity to love so much, then loss and grief is just a natural side of that.
I would measure grief not as a sadness, but as a longing for that relationship.
A muddle of every emotion that you can imagine associated with loss. That's not necessarily loss after somebody dies, but loss of a future, loss of a job, loss of a relationship.
Grief is the last love letter you ever write someone.
So if you imagine you have like a big circle, and the circle is your life, the circle is like everything you have and know and all the people you love. And when somebody dies, particularly if it's someone very close to you, like a parent, quite a big chunk of that circle just disappears and can't be there anymore. And I think grief is the feeling of loss and of something missing. And I think the process of healing that it kind of is grieving is realizing that you will never fill that gap, ever. But that doesn't mean that your circle doesn't keep expanding and you don't keep meeting new people that you love and having experiences that make you feel good and developing as a person. And I think the moment when you realise that the fact that you have this gap and this loss doesn't mean that your life doesn't continue, I think that's kind of, I don't think it's like the moment your grieving is over, but I think it's a huge turning point in the whole process.
I actually think grief is just the feeling you get when you know that your life won't be quite the same. And I think it's this idea that you have to learn from it in a sense, but also you have to live with the fact that you won't be the same and your life won't be the same because of something that's happened.
It's this thing I've been mulling on. Loss is about not only the loss of the thing, but the loss of an idea of yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a constant reminder of the fact that you will forever change.
I think when we lose anything, part of what's difficult about it is that you become exclusively reliant upon yourself for it to continue to exist in some sense.
Yeah, totally.
Like, if you have some profound connection with a person or a place or a thing and you lose it from your reality, it only then exists within yourself. And we all know how fallible our memories are. And also, like, we instinctively want to hold on to that thing. And so you can kind of confront this horrible tension between the need to remember the person and the fact that, like, the reality of, if I'm going to get over this, then part of me is going to have to forget it.
Part of grief and remembrance of someone is memory. And it's in these moments when we look back on our time spent with someone who we've lost that we remember special things about them. We remember what they smelt like or what their skin felt like. We remember their favourite songs, their favourite books. We remember precious moments that we've shared with that person before they passed away. But memory is such a difficult thing because it's so personal and so subjective that quite often when we go through something as terrible as losing someone, our memories can be complex, our memories can be different, or sometimes we just try to forget that that terrible occasion ever happened at all. And this is why when you lose someone and you go through the grieving process, memories are quite often the biggest thing you have to hold on to that person that was there before but isn't there anymore. So I think my earliest memory is sitting in Kate's bed and watching Wimbledon. I honestly think that's my earliest memory. It's quite a difficult memory because she's laid in bed and I'm next to her. And she's obviously got her wrist out and she's been going through chemotherapy and she was tiny. And I've always had quite big hands, but even as a 3 or 4 year old, I could put my entire hand around her wrist. I remember just watching the tennis with her and doing that in a way. And I'm not sure why I did that, but it must have just been me instinctively dealing with this idea of like deterioration or trying to get my head around the fact that she was so frail and that her body and actually her as a person were fading away. I always think about it in that way. And it's quite a nice gesture because although it's quite a strong and difficult image to have in my brain as a first memory, at least it's a memory with her.
I think kind of personally, as someone who's interested in the act of archiving and recording, and realistically that's why I work in sound and audio, I see acts of creativity as this, as a way of capturing a moment and holding it there to kind of revisit if you need, but sort of apart from you. And so, you know, creativity in and of itself is a way of remembering. When we think about that in the context of grief and loss, it's like to create is to affirm the existence of that moment and to think this did happen and it does exist in a way that's significant and it's not going to disappear and it exists outside of me. And I think working with you on this project, it feels like it's turned into a way for you to archive and work through and validate your grief. And like that's what creativity is in lots of ways.
In fact, with that memory of Kate, maybe I couldn't actually put my hand around her wrist as a really young kid. Maybe it's more that I'm remembering the sentiment surrounding that gesture of being in bed next to her while she's frail watching Wimbledon and thinking of that physical action as an emotional reflection of how I felt about her fragility at that time. Because memory is so personal and so subjective, when you mix in emotion and a multitude of emotions such as grief, then some of your memories might be slightly emotionally elaborated. And conversely, when some people look back on their trauma because of grief, they don't see some different version of that memory, but they just can't remember what happened because it's actually too traumatic to remember. And during this project, I went through my mum Kate's memorial tape with my mum Sue for the first time in 22 years. And she explained how she can't really remember what happened in that period of time.
It's sort of weird looking back at that time because I can't really remember much about myself at that time.
What do you mean by you can't remember much of yourself back then?
Well, I think I was in trauma and I know I spoke, but I can't really even remember what I said, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a bit like going back into a trauma in your life, you know?
Yeah, no, I know. I don't think it's going to be easy to listen to.
No. And the course is, yeah, I could have listened to it. I could have stuck it into a machine that plays tapes and I didn't, you know?
Yeah, because it's difficult.
If there's a period of time in your life where you're struggling, or maybe the whole world or your world is struggling, it's really hard to look back and remember what actually happened during that time, because I think your brain goes to kind of the preset of I must forget what I have suffered through. So I think almost me coming back to Stroud and looking through photos was a way of me triggering those memories, because I've thought more and more about that period of time since being here, because I've had actual visual aids to make me reflect upon that. And even when we transcribed Kate's memorial service, loads of memories around that came back. And like, for instance, there's a memory at Kate's funeral where my brother and I had a lily fight. And we basically got all the pollen from the lilies and like smudged it on each other's faces. And that's how I found out I was allergic to lilies. So I remember my whole face just being like really red and puffy during my mum's funeral. One thing I can definitely reflect upon about my creative time spent producing and presenting this podcast is that my exposure to grief has definitely become more significant by interviewing lots of guests and producing and editing audio surrounding grief. I feel like this creative output that I've done is not only a reflection of my emotions, but has actually made me feel more comfortable in normalizing grief. I've been so humbled and grateful to have shared my experience of grief with other people and to have had them share their loss with me. Grieving people need a safe, creative, and communal space to share their thoughts and feelings. This is Amber from The Grief Gang, who runs an online grief community and podcast that aims to normalise conversations around grief.
Without sounding, not like rude, but some people are desperate for it. They're desperate for someone to ask, what's their name? And you'd be surprised at how many people are like gagging to say their loved one's name. And it's almost like giving permission when it should never be the case. We should just be able to speak freely of our loved ones whenever and however we want. But in the society that we live in, it's almost that we have to be given permission to grieve publicly or openly. I love to talk about Mum. Talking about her is so much easier than putting it in words. then the podcast idea I dabbled with, and I started recording the first few ones just myself and just talking about my own experiences. And then I think more the creativity came when I started meeting guests and I was able to create like a format. Questions I feel I ask my guests, and when I spoke to them after, it's sort of questions they haven't been asked in a long time, if ever. So for them, it's quite a, ooh, it brings out things or emotions that they may not have felt for a very long time. And then it, when I ask them, and the response I get back is just this overload of them telling stories of their loved one, of emotion, of happiness, sadness. If anyone is thinking of creating a podcast around grief or doing anything around grief, it's needed and it's wanted in whatever way you want to creatively express that. Even if you think it might be, oh no, no one's going to bother with that, or no one's going to, you know, relate to that. Trust me, there are 7 billion people in the world. There will be at least one person who can relate to that, and you will help them.
There's this moment in the interview with Jess where you're talking about growing up with grief kind of over time and how it becomes part of you in this way, which maybe you think other people don't experience.
Oh yeah, when she talks about being part of the grief club.
Ultimately, grief is like a confrontation with mortality, you know? It makes you recognise and understand that everyone's going to die. But then there's also something kind of real in that and authentic in that, because death and dying is part of life and living. Do you feel, in some sense, grateful is absolutely not what I mean. Do you feel like, yeah, enlightened? Do you feel enlightened with grief? And this is getting very esoteric now and very like, I don't know, but yeah, what do you feel about that?
Yeah, I guess I do feel enlightened because of grief. I guess less enlightened, but more kind of aware of mortality and death and grief and how to kind of approach those feelings in my own existence. I totally feel like I am now officially part of the grief club, or as my other friend put it, the dead parents club. Yeah. it's not really a club I'd like to be part of, obviously. But I do think that loss and losing someone does make you have quite a unique outlook on life, because first and foremost, you kind of think, well, the literal worst has happened. So if anything else happens, it's probably not going to be as bad as this. And secondly, you think, well, I know what the literal worst feels like. So when I am sad, or when I recognize really, you know, grieving emotions such as a relationship breakup or maybe the breakdown of friendship, I kind of am a bit like, well, it's not quite as bad as my mum dying, which sounds awful, but it does kind of prepare you for real life emotions, I think. Also, it kind of does normalize grief a little bit, especially because if you're revisiting that feeling of grief, you kind of are already prepared for it. So if you go through that breakup, or you lose your job, or you have to move house or city, and you have this change in your life that you have to grieve over, you know what that feeling will feel like, and you can be comfortable in the discomfort, I guess. I don't want to say I'm getting more numb to the concept of grief, but I think it's more that because I'm normalizing the concept of it in my daily existence so much more than I'd done in, what, 26 years of my existence, that now I can talk about it without breaking down, and now I can talk about it with other people and be supportive and empathetic without being overly emotional about it.
How do you think that there's a relationship between creativity for you in terms of like being slightly more distant from grief? Do you think there's something dangerous about making stuff when you're in the like absolute root of the pain? Or do you think that's when it's kind of the most raw and the most useful?
I mean, feelings always intensify at different stages of your existence, and grief is actually quite a timeless emotion.
So I'd say any creative output from that can be stronger or weaker in terms of emotional sentiment at different points. It's not just as soon as someone dies, you have immediacy of creative output. Sometimes these emotions can take a while for you to reflect upon. And I think that there is something about grief and its potency as an emotion that means that you have to express it in some way. Personally, I think all creativity is wonderful. And it doesn't have to be necessarily inspired by one emotion. I mean, I'm talking from this perspective of grief because I'm adamant that grief is this multitude of emotions. But I've been inspired to manifest creative work based on happiness and love and positive emotions I've felt as well. I just think there's something special about the fact that creativity can be used as something therapeutic when it comes to dealing with feelings of grief. The intimacy of this series, in terms of me literally going on tape and being like, I Google, I smoke 4 cigarettes a month, do I have lung cancer? Or like talking about how every time I visit Highgate Cemetery, I break down in tears regardless of the situation. Almost being that intimate in this format has made it all seem, in comparison, quite easy to deal with, in a sense. Like, if I can go on podcasts and radio and literally expose how my brain works that I've never spoken about in a way to anyone before, in a way that I can't even articulate to my mum, my brother, my boyfriend, then sitting in the intensity of those emotions of grief feels much more comfortable. It's a much more comfortable space than it ever has been. Creatively expressing yourself is a way of sitting comfortably in a room with your shadow, and your shadow is obviously your feelings of grief. But I don't think that shadow ever leaves you. I think sometimes you just don't look at it in the same way. I'm not gonna lie, I feel quite emotional wrapping up series one of When Someone Great Is Gone. I'd like to give a special thanks to my co-producer Bridie for putting in literally blood, sweat and tears into the production of this podcast. I'd also like to thank my wonderful mum Sue for being so supportive and loving and an absolute rock throughout my entire life. I'd like to give another special thanks to my boyfriend James for staying up late and entertaining my wild creative thoughts surrounding the podcast when I can't sleep. And to my friends and wider family for being so supportive and such a community of which I can talk to, love and reach out to whenever I need. And last but not least, I'd like to thank my mum Kate, because without her, without knowing her for those few but precious years of my life, none of this would have happened. For someone to make that much of an impact on someone's life for those few years is just testament to what a wonderful woman she was. This is not the end of When Someone Great Is Gone, so it's goodbye for now, and thank you so much to everyone involved. And if you're listening to this because you need help with your grief right now, I just want to personally say that you're not alone, and I really hope that this series has helped you in some way. Thank you.